to welcome the Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host for a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. We've got, yes, he's going to be perfect for today's show, Scott Steyard, former Green Beret Delta Force operative, and we are covering some stuff on Iran, some great news that happened over the Easter holiday weekend. I cannot wait to talk about it. So thanks so much for being on the show, Scott. And you know, he's also with Aero Precision at aeroprecisionusa.com as well. If you guys like arms, you that's all I need to say. You guys should be very familiar with them and their fantastic products. Hey, also a shout out to our sponsors. Guys, please support our sponsors. They go the great lengths to bring this good quality content to you. You know, our title sponsor is Gulls at Gulls.com. Don't forget that discount code they have, Radio15, in order to get 15% off your next order. We have ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. Also, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And yes, during the live show right now, we're streaming to around 1 million followers on social media. We have Safeguard Recruiting. That's the streaming sponsor. TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. If you want cool gear like the coffee mug behind me, go to LeoRoundtable.com and go to the online store in the upper right-hand corner and check it out. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns from the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian, and getting on MSN. Also, Ray Dietrich with FormerLawman.com and Travis Shades with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? This is why am I so excited? Rescue behind enemy lines pilots, that is plural, ladies and gentlemen, saved as the U.S. hammers the crap out of the Iranian command centers. I love it. Then we got Denver jury finds police critic guilty of doxing a cop, and the DA says that she's crossed the line. Wait till you hear what happens. And then we got the Louisville Metro Police Department. They have a body cam showing a police shooting, fatally shooting a woman that's holding a glass object during a mental health crisis in the bathroom. And yeah, there's some, and the firefighters got involved in it too. There's some interesting critiques there. Security officer stabbed, resulting in the death of a suspect in Des Moines. And we've got a suspended Massachusetts troopers. They plead not guilty to manslaughter charges in a recruit training's death. We've covered that before, but that's just the latest update. Jacksonville cops fatally shoot a domestic disturbance suspect when he pulled out a gun. Scott wants to cover that one. An Illinois mom faces felony charges after she opened fires to stop an attack on her son. Brings up some very interesting points, legal points. So, look, let's get this party started. And I'm so excited. Well, I'll read, you know, this is from the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. We have six articles talking about this Iran thing. Let me just start by saying, you know, over the weekend, it was, you know, Easter Sunday, holiday weekend, Good Friday, you know, where we celebrate the death of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Everybody says, well, why do they say, you know, people say, why is it a Good Friday when you're celebrating the death of somebody, right? But of course, it would be meaningless if you didn't celebrate the resurrection on Easter, you know, on the third day. So that's what really makes it the greatest thing, because the death would have been nothing without the resurrection, and the resurrection never going to happen without the death. So, so I wake up on Easter Sunday morning, and first thing I do, as you guys know, I read Copying COVID by attorney Jeff Childers, who's in Gainesville, Florida, because I subscribe and I just give $50 a month to him. And it helps reimburse him for all the man hours. He has a staff that helps him put this newsletter together on a daily basis. So because of that, I get the Sunday edition. Had I not been that paying subscriber, I wouldn't have got the Sunday version. But oh my gosh, there were three words: we got him. And I saw that, and of course I have been not worried sick, but I have been very, I felt a lot of weight on my on my shoulders, well, in my mind at least, about this guy, this missing pilot or navigator, the number two seat in the F-15 Eagle. And you know, it's holidays, we're getting ready to bomb the crap out of Iran, and we have a missing pilot, and it's been, what, 40, it's been like over a day, and so they finally got him, and it was just such relief knowing that. Scott, when you heard the news, when did you hear the news? How did you hear it? Was it on Easter Sunday, or?
Yeah.
We're your buddies in the middle of it, calling up Scott. You never believe what's going on.
They wouldn't tell me anyhow because they're not allowed to. But I heard it. I was actually looking because I kept like you know, you would say, you don't know what you hear is true half the time. So I'm like looking, I'm like waiting for a reliable source to say, yep, we ended up finding this guy. So I was like on my phone checking and checking and checking. So when I woke up is when I found out all over the news. So it was amazing because, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is like, in that situation, it's the family, you know, like, can you imagine a father, you know, he was a colonel. So he probably, you know, if he has kids, they're definitely of the age that they understand what's going on, where their father's at, of course, the wife and the family. You could just imagine just like knowing that he's missing. And even though they didn't mention the name, they kind of know, you know, there's the wife network out there. The wives get together, they talk, you're going to know stuff like this, especially when it's all over the news. Okay. So, you know, just, I was so pleased to hear that. And I'm just so glad that, you know, also Iran didn't find them. And then, you know, the chance, I mean, obviously there's going to be some torture involved. They're going to, you know, use him as a pawn. It just would muddy the water. It would make already this complicated, you know, huge feat even worse. And so it was just a huge win, huge victory, huge moral victory as well. And it's just
the mental play on this is great. Yeah. Let me read these. We got six articles, and I'm not going to read all six. I'm going to read the headlines to some of them. But let me, for the people who just don't know, and look, this is going to be a huge movie blockbuster. This is going to be when we get all the information out on this, it's just going to be fascinating. But so Tampa Free Press at TampaFB.com, I got six articles and they kind of describe, but guys, there's so much stuff involving the CIA and so much stuff going on in this thing. And we just have snippets of the information. Rescue behind enemy lines, pilots, plural, saved as U.S. hammers Iranian command center. So American search and rescue team successfully extracted two U.S. service members from Iranian territory on April the 4th, concluding a high-stakes recovery operation that started when their F-15 Strike Eagle was shot down 2 days earlier. The fighter jet was down on April the 2nd, so 2 days earlier, while conducting a combat mission over the country. And I had read from another source that I don't have here that they believe it was a shoulder-mounted missile from Russia that they had just procured from Russia, which kind of ticks me off a little bit, and that's what brought them down. They have intelligence on that supposedly, but it also the next article, we got him, which is what Trump released at about 4:06 or 4:07 in the morning on Easter Sunday, and that's what he put out on Truth Social. And Trump was getting no sleep. Him and Hegseth and these guys, man, I was told that they were working around the clock. You know, Trump didn't go to Mar-a-Lago. So can you imagine? I mean, you know, there were like Biden would have been checked out. He would have been sleeping and somebody else was running the country anyhow. But could you, I mean, I just know Trump is so worried about this and this is the way he operates. And I know he doesn't need a lot of sleep, but still it's the holiday. He's got Melania. She's probably back at Mar-a-Lago and there's probably things that they want to do and the brunch and all that stuff and maybe church. But no, he's doing the right thing, and he's hanging and he's in charge. He's watching all this intel going down. In a dramatic turnaround after 48-hour manhunt, the missing American crew member from the downed F-15E Strike Eagle was rescued Sunday morning by U.S. forces. President Trump confirmed the success of the mission on Truth Social. I think it was, 4:07 in the morning, marking the end of a high-stakes search and rescue operation that had the world on edge. And it was supposedly a heck of a gunfight. The rescued service member, identified by the president as a highly respected colonel, just like you said, Scott, he was the second of a two-person crew to be recovered from Iranian territory. The fighter jet's pilot had been rescued on Friday, shortly after the aircraft was downed by Iranian fire. But the second officer, this is the guy we were worried about, a weapons systems officer, remained missing in the rugged mountainous terrain of southwestern Iran. He supposedly had a leg injury, and he went up to a high mountainous area. It must have been a struggle just to get up there where he was hiding. And there were apparently dudes, you know, everybody carries, you know, AK-47 there anyhow, but they were incentivizing to the public to find this guy and turn him over. And Trump says, my fellow Americans, over the past several hours, the United States military pulled off one of the most daring search and rescue operations in U.S. history. Trump wrote on Sunday morning, he stated the officer is safe and sound. noted that the colonel sustained injuries during the ordeal, but he'll be just fine. I saw a beautiful picture of him, you know, being surrounded and hugged by the guys that rescued him. Everybody had, they had bigger smiles on their faces than he did. I think that they were happier. Previous reports indicated that search helicopters and the A-10 Thunderbolt, which I love those things, they had also been targeted by the Iranian air defenses during the mission's earlier phases. We lost that A-10 as well. The successful recovery comes at a critical moment in the 36-day conflict. And on Saturday, Trump issued the 48-hour ultimatum to open the Strait of Hormuz or face hell. And that deadline expires today, Monday. And Iranian officials have previously offered a $60,000 reward for the capture of the American, you know, the second pilot. U.S. officials now say both crew members are back in friendly hands. I saw an article where one of the Olympic athletes from Iran, not the female soccer players, it was a dude offering his medals to whoever grabbed the pilot and turned him over. Next headline, New York Rep. Lawler hails incredible Iran rescue as War Powers Act debate heats up. And then smoke and mirrors, how the CIA deception op masked the daring mountain rescue of a U.S. airman. This is just like Great Scott. A high-stakes game of intelligence theater allowed U.S. forces to pull a missing weapon system officer from Iranian territory under the cover of a CIA-led deception campaign. And this is according to senior administration officials. Before the crew member was even located, CIA leaking false information within Iran, claiming that American forces had already grabbed them and that they were transporting him across the land to get him out of there, to extract him. And while Iranian assets were diverted by the false information, the agency used specialized tracking capabilities to find this guy. Man, we're 12 seconds out. Guys, we're going to a commercial break. I'm too excited to notice the break's coming up. Sorry. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Gall's, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by former Green Beret and Delta Force operative Scott Steyert, and we are absolutely killing it. I say we're killing it. I think we are. We're talking about the rescue behind enemy lines, pilots, plurals, yes, saved. U.S. is hammering the Iranian command centers, and we got them he wouldn't like that. The Truth Social post that went out about 4:07 in the morning on Easter Sunday, announcing that, you know, we got our pilot that's been missing for about 48 hours. It says before he was even located, the CIA intentionally leaked false information within Iran, claiming that they had already, you know, found them and they were in the process of extracting them out of the country and stuff and sending forces in another area of the country. And I've even read articles talking about how they've got this network with friendly Iranians that are assisting us and spreading the misinformation. It's just a fascinating op story involving the CIA that helped save this pilot's life. He was armed, you know, just with a pistol and hiding in the mountainous terrain. Once the agency pinpointed the exact coordinates, the data was funneled directly to the Pentagon and to the White House. Remember, I said that Trump and Hegseth are like awake all night, right? And so these guys get involved. Trump reportedly spent the day in the Oval Office receiving constant updates from the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, and they ordered the immediate extraction. So the CIA maintained the real-time intelligence feed throughout the mission, and they were guiding the teams, you know, on the ground. And then we've got, I can't say all the words in this because of FCC guidelines, but then I've got a couple quotes from Trump, a couple headlines. You crazy, It's the word, the end of the word is TARDS, and it starts with a B. And Trump issues final ultimatum to Iran following the high stakes pilot rescue. And he gives them a blistering ultimatum to the leadership on Sunday, threatening the total destruction of the nation's infrastructure, usually off limits, unless the Strait of Hormuz is immediately reopened. And a series of statements posted to the Truth Social. And I love the fact that he uses his own, you know, Truth Social or his own social media network. The president warned that Tuesday, tomorrow, would be power plant day and bridge day for Iran, suggesting a massive coordinated strike against the country's power grid and transportation networks. I can't wait. Open the effing strait, you crazy tards, and or you'll be living in hell. Just watch. And then there's another title. It's about the same thing, and it's got words in there. I can't say it. So anyhow, with all this additional information that we have, and also we talked about before, you know, before we went live, that this morning we found out that Iran has bombed some infrastructure in Israel this morning. And so I don't even know if Trump's going to wait until tomorrow. They may just like say, let's take out the bridges and the power plants now. I don't know. Scott, were you, with all this new information, the CIA, and I don't know how much you can say or how much you've done with the capabilities of the CIA. I'm always impressed by them and some of the other three-letter agencies. But any new thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, from the time I was in, everything's changed already. So, I mean, I wouldn't have any of the latest and greatest. But I will say this, you know, it's just pretty common. Like the pilots, they're going to have beacons on them. They're going to have, you know, specialized radios and stuff like that. So it was interesting. It must have been where the plane went down that caused it to take so much time and a situation on the ground. Because, you know, we have a general idea where the plane went down based on where the first pilot was picked up. We have an idea where the other pilot could be. I mean, again, it's not going to be exact, obviously, because of winds and everything else. But generally speaking, they're going to have beacons. You're going to have all that stuff. So initially what came to my mind was because it took so long, I was like, man, I hope the pilot is still alive. Because, you know, when you're ejecting out of a plane that's doing crazy and God knows how fast, get bumped in the head, you know, could break your neck. There's a lot that can go on. So
pretty traumatic, I hear.
Yeah. So I was thinking, man, it's not good, but now in hindsight, I'm like, well, it must have been a situation where they figured out where he was at, but then it was like, how are we going to get this guy? Because there could be maybe a base that's nearby. There's, you know, a populated, you know, city. It could be the terrain. It could have been the route in because the plane was just shot down. So now they have to worry about other anti-aircraft, you know, stuff. There is a lot going on. So the fact that it took that long, it tells me that it was probably very difficult just to plan that mission. It's because, I mean, I would have to believe that they had a really good idea where he was at, and maybe even had eyes on him. I mean, satellites over the sky that are dedicated, yeah. I'm sure. So it must have been one of those situations where it's like, man, yeah, we know where he's at. But getting to him is a whole another story. So coming up with a clever scheme to be able to do that, because they're already, I mean, the CSAR guys, they're on standby. They're ready to go. They're professional at what they do. That's all they train to do.
Yeah. Talk about that. Tell people about that outfit, when they go to the war, they'll usually have a portion of those guys. There's what, 300 or 500 of them. And they'll actually be there in case they're needed to go do a rescue and stuff. And that's all they do, right?
Yeah, I mean, the CSAR mission, there's a lot of units that have that mission, but I would suspect the one in the Air Force, there it's very, very specialized. That's like all they do. And so they're probably the proponent of that. They're probably the best at it because of the environment, because they're in the Air Force. Obviously, that's something that they have to think about. I was, I've actually been on, I had a mission with the CSAR package in Central and South America at some point. And so I trained up on it. So I kind of have an idea of what it entails. But I mean, you're just ready to go. They have all the assets. They have all the, you know, they know how to plan it out. They, you know, of course, there's going to be medics with there, you know, or with them. So when they get them, they're able to give them medical attention right away. just a lot of stuff that goes into it. So, I mean, so as soon as this happened, they were ready to go. They were, the guys were standing by, the commanders and everything. Obviously, they're planning the mission. They're getting all the intel. They're gathering everything, but they were ready to go, I'm sure. And the minute they heard it, you know, it a plane went down. So it's just a matter of, I think it was just probably very, very tough, the whole planning process, which is pretty slick on the CIA's part to kind of divert that because of probably where they were at and how difficult it was to get in because of terrain and everything else, and maybe the populace, just having that ability to divert their assets, Iranian assets, away from that, it was probably a huge factor. So
yeah, the Iranians aren't the only ones that can lie. Yeah. So, you know, well, I got another question for you when we come back, and then we'll start rolling in another direction. But hey, we're coming up on another commercial break, guys. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low optics manner, utilizing what they're called their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers not only tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had, listen to this, over 250,000 deployments, no injuries, no deaths. That's an amazing stat. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductor energy weapon, the glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com and tell them that Chip and Scott sent you. ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by former Green Beret and Delta Force operative Scott Steyert. We've been talking about the rescue of our two F-15 pilots in Iran, and the second one got picked up after a 48-hour manhunt yesterday, Easter Sunday morning, when Trump sent out a social media post on Truth Social at 4 o'clock in the morning. I absolutely love it. So stoked, so excited. And Scott, I was going to ask you, I know we've been talking about this, and we're getting close to moving on. You may not even know this, but I was just wondering, obviously these guys in the cockpit can talk to each other. My question was, is that if they eject from the plane in a situation like this and they're on their way, is there any way, do you know if the pilots or the pilot navigator or the number two, can they communicate at all once they're in the air or even when they're on the ground? I think they've got radios. I know they've got tracking devices on them and stuff, but do you know if they can communicate at all?
Yeah, they should be. I don't know about it in the air. I don't know how much time they have for that, but they should be able to communicate on the ground.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just kind of curious.
But it depends too. I mean, they might, but it's like, where are you at? Well, you know, then it's kind of like, you know, I'm east of the mountains. Well, they might be in mountains all over. So still, even if they're able to communicate, it still might be extremely difficult to figure out where that person's at. And like, and because, Iran is so large, you know, depending on, you know, how much fly time, you know, so that's probably why they're like, look, we need to pinpoint this person because we don't have enough fuel to keep going back and forth looking for him and then get the heck out of there. Yeah. There's just a lot of planning involved in this. And I think that's where this really, you know, we're really shined at was, I mean, because the execution of it, I mean, we are the best. I mean, we train like that, especially our special operations folks, because we have, you know, we've been assessed, selected and everything, but we also have the money and the assets to train to the highest level, you know, you can have. Because I mean, a lot of times it's like, yeah, I mean, there's might be really good guys that are capable of a lot of things, but they don't have the time and the money to get to that level and train with the, you know, with the best equipment in the world. So there's no doubt that they're going to execute flawlessly, but it's the planning as well. The planning was huge in this.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we're, look, I don't want anything bad to happen to anybody, and I'm pleased to hear that the pilots are going to be okay. But I, you know what, there's, you know, you have training and then you have stuff like this. I'm so excited for our military and these guys getting involved on the rescue. And this is not just a training exercise. This is like real world stuff. Mm-hmm. And we suffered, from what I understand, absolutely zero casualties, just like in Venezuela. You know, well, I guess we had a couple guys shot in helicopters, I think, in Venezuela, but no one died. But you know, there's no substitute for this kind of action and just testing the limits of the military. I know the guys are stoked. They got to be just like so freaking excited, you know, to get that call. And
because that's what that is their main mission. That is what they live
for.
And thank God they don't have to do that very often.
Yeah.
Right. Because it just didn't happen. But when it's time to go, that's their whole mission. That's everything they've trained for that moment. That is it's always a Super Bowl for them. There's no
point.
There's always the game. It's like everything is on the line when they have to do it for real. It is go time. There's no train up. There's no playoffs. It's like every time they go out, it's real world. It's they're playing for keeps.
So. And so guys, please support the military. And look, these guys are doing this for us. Because of what these guys are doing, you can go to bed tonight, not worry about a long range, you know, missile, you know, coming from Iran with a nuclear warhead on it because of what we did. And any, you know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of naysayers and people that have upset with the war and stuff. And maybe you guys would be okay with worrying about that. Or maybe you wouldn't worry about it. Maybe you just wouldn't wake up one day after the nuke hit. You know, I don't know. Maybe you're in California, which happens to be, you know, the first place that would get hit. But anyhow, there may be some uncomfortableness at the pump right now, which I don't care about. I just want to pound these guys into the Stone Age. I just, you know, don't want to have, you know, I don't have kids, but I don't want Scott's kids and their future kids to have to worry about stuff like this. And that's the only, and we've got a president with the stones to get it done. And, he doesn't have to worry about reelection. But we want to keep the Republicans in the House. I think the people that really understand and they have the capacity to get it, they can appreciate what he's doing for us. And even though there might be some uncomfortableness right now, you know, all these other European countries, now at least we know where we stand and where they stand. And there any uncomfortableness on this side, it's definitely only magnified on that side. These guys, the Europeans, just are in a world of hurt, and they're having to rely on us. And so I can't wait to see what is done with the Strait or with Karg Island. And I think that we're going to have some pleasant surprises coming around the corner. So certainly.
Well, I hope so. And honestly, like at the end of the day, you know, as a soldier, we don't really concern ourselves so much with what the politicians are saying or anything like that. Cause it's really not up. You know, when I was in, I was like, hey, they might, you know, I have somebody who doesn't go to war. You might have one that does, or we just might have a need to go to war, like on 9/11. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter to me. I fight next to my buddies. We fight together. We do it for each other. So I would say politics aside, when it's go time, then everybody should back the plan without hesitation. And certainly the soldiers on the ground, because they're just doing their job, just like ICE is doing their job, just like police are doing their job. Don't shoot the messenger, don't hate the messenger. And you know, that's the way I look at it. I will always support soldiers and police officers. They have a very, very tough job. They don't have the luxury of choosing and you know, this and that. They raise their hand, they swore on an oath they're going to defend the Constitution, or they're, you know, so it is what it is. And we have the best soldiers in the world. So I love it.
No doubt. Love it too. And Arthur Johnson, good seeing you guys from Richmond, Virginia, where it's 55 degrees. Crap, that's cold. And then Northwest Anchor Certification. So, hey, I think you're new to the show on YouTube. So thanks for watching. Of course, MBS and Chili and all those guys over on Rumble. Thanks for watching the show, guys. We appreciate it. So moving along. And I want to keep Scott happy here. So let me do this. Let me just cover this Denver one real quick here, because MVS is in Colorado, and we want to cover this, and then we'll get to the story with the video component. CBSNews.com. Denver jury finds police critic guilty of doxing a cop. The DA says she crossed the line. So, it's finally happened, right? So at Denver, and this is Denver of all places, you know, where they're really liberal. A Denver jury has found an activist, Reagan Benson, a frequent critic of police, guilty of doxing And this is with the Denver police. So a Denver police commander during a live stream was doxxed by her last September on what appears to be the first conviction under Colorado's anti-doxing law. So I must admit, I got to call it like you see it. So they finally get one right. Benson, the female that did this, says, "I was exceptionally disappointed." Yeah, but she was. And it was a 2-day trial in Denver County Court. The 53-year-old grandmother faces sentencing in May, a possible jail term. Well, let's hope so. She maintains that she committed no crime. That's how freaking incompetent she is. But not incompetent to stand trial. I don't want the judge to get any ideas. I guess she's already, they're going to do the, it's just going to be a sentencing hearing anyhow. I was not committing a crime. She says there was no victim. We have a right to engage in civil protest. And that's exactly what I was doing and why I would do it again. And I hope she does do it again. Her supporters say the case is likely headed for appeal on First Amendment grounds. And they're talking about a constitutional challenge to the Colorado's anti-doxing statute. The law is of course designed to protect public, employees, public workers from facing, fallout really from the personal information being revealed online and stuff, their home addresses and stuff like that, which is exactly what she did. So on September 3rd, she was doing a live stream from the Denver Police Department's District 3 station and one of hundreds that she conducted in recent years, hundreds. And she often targets police and other government officials. Now, she has about 24,000 followers on YouTube, according to this article. And on some of her live streams, she can be heard or seen screaming expletives in the face of police officers. So she's not a class act at all. I can't believe, YouTube tries to they demonetize us and tries to make us, kill our channel, delete it. And she's got 24,000 followers on YouTube. And it's like they embrace, anti-police crap. During the broadcast, though, Benson criticized the Denver Police Department's commander, Joel Bell, and she had a contentious relationship with him for a while. And it said that and previously sued. At one point, she asked her viewers to try to find his home address. And when viewers did, she repeated the street address on the live stream. That's what got her in trouble. And, why hopefully she should be going to jail. Scott.
Yeah. So under this is what makes me sick. Like under the guise of their First Amendment right. Listen, why would you want to take someone who is in a public setting, someone like the chief of police, if you have a problem with that person, and you want to exercise your First Amendment right, then go to where they work. Do it in, take to the street, do a protest. But why would you want to find where their domicile is, where their family, their kids, their wife? Doesn't make sense.
I agree. Jail, I hope. Commercial break, we'll be right back, guys. All right, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com, but they've got a new gig going. So everybody's familiar with the certification they offer. You can become a certified gun specialist or firearm specialist with GunLearn.com. It's that unique certification that they have. And now you can actually turn that into college credits. It's an amazing opportunity. They've hooked up with Smarter Degree. And so their firearm specialist certification, even if you obtained it like 5 years ago, it's now worth college credits through Smarter Degrees University Partners Program. So whether you're pursuing a degree or you simply want to maximize the value of your education, it opens up a new pathway for academic recognition for your firearms training. And GunLearn.com, of course, is the first and only company that offer that step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. And they've been doing this since 1996. And if you have your own agency, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Go to GunLearn.com to get more information. GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by former Green Beret Delta Force operator Scott Steyert. And yeah, we've been talking about the rescuing of the two pilots from the F-15 Strike Eagle. And then, of course, this latest story where the female doxing the Denver police, I think it was a commander or a lieutenant, and she's in the world of hurt now. Hopefully you're going to be going to prison over that one. And that's setting the stage in a liberal place like Denver, if you can believe that. So,
yeah. So what I'd like to know, what does she intend to accomplish by letting the public know, which means God knows who, because we already know there is a extreme, crazy, radical side of, the woke, anti-cop, anti-everything, whatever. So what does she intend to do? Like, what is she? It, to me, that's almost like kind of like a terrorist act in some way, because you're using the threat. You're intimidating somebody to, you know, maybe change the result of how they feel, or maybe change a lot, whatever. I don't know. Like, maybe she thinks this is going to go away. But what are you trying to do? Because
the objective,
What is the objective? Because that person who's at that house, he's also at work. He's also, you know, out in the public. So why his house, where his kids and his wife and everything else, where, you know, where he wants to relax and, you know, not have to think about, you know, being at work and being defensive or what's around him. Like, that to me is like, the line has been crossed. And I hope that
I can't think of a plausible explanation for her to have the risk. Yeah, well, look, I mean, look no further than our ICE agents that are getting doxxed and families are being threatened stuff. And then we've got these liberal jurisdictions that want to put up laws saying that federal agents can't hide their faces. I mean, even when I did off certain ops, I carried a mask, you know, in my bag. I had to, you know, you had to protect your identity sometimes, you know.
It's common sense. It's very logical and having to do that.
Unless you're an idiot, and of course there's a lot of that going on out there. So yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. All right. So I'll tell you what. Let's. You said you wanted to go with the DV call. So let's go with the Jacksonville call. So our favorite law enforcement video channel at Rumble.com is called This Is Butter. We have a Jacksonville police officer, plural, fatally shoot a domestic disturbance suspect when he pulls out a gun.
We're debriefing.
I understand that.
Do you have any weapons on you?
Excuse me?
Do you have any weapons on you?
Why are you rolling up on me?
Hey! Hey, Snake! Get back! Get back! Stop! Come on! Get down!
Stop! Oh my God! What is this?
Ma'am, get back! Get
Stop!
Back! Ma'am! Ma'am, please!
I understand that.
Do you have any weapons on you?
Excuse me?
Do you have any weapons on you?
Why are you rolling up on me?
Hey! Get back!
Jacksonville, Florida. Again, this is not helping us in Florida people look any better, Scott. You're from Florida, so even though you're not in Florida now, you're in Colorado, you still carry some of the weight here. Oh, Jacksonville, yeah. Multiple people at an area apartment complex, they called 911 over concerns about a DV, domestic violence dispute, that had been occurring between a man and a woman, and they were married. Now, one of the callers was an employee at the complex. At one point, the man part of this domestic, he leaves the complex, but he returns with a gun. So when Jacksonville police, and that is really, it's the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, you know, they've kind of consolidated there. The District 3 officers, when they get there, they separate the couple. But remember, the guy has returned with a gun. After speaking to the woman, the officers approach the guy to get his side of the story. And as they approach, he pulls out a gun from his waistband. Both officers fire. They hit the suspect. Suspect taken to a local hospital. Amazingly, he dies because, you know, we're not always the best shots, even at close range. He's been identified as 34-year-old Daniel Rodriguez. And so that's the way it goes down. Now, kind of looking at my show notes here, you know, officers responded. They responded to the DV call, and they approached the suspect after talking with a female. And he goes for the gun at 8 minutes and 56 seconds, and then shots are fired just 3 seconds later at 8:59, and he ends up dying. We've got a second body cam showing what happened at 10-minute mark, but they've also got a nice slow motion with freeze frame that starts at 10:52, which is really, really good if you want to see and understand what happened. Scott Stark.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this because I wanted to give those law enforcement officers, you know, huge kudos. I mean, going into domestic violence type situation is always the scariest. It's the unknown. You have large amounts of emotions involved. And just from like watching the video, the guy seemed kind of like chilled, like didn't like, you know, I don't know if you would look at somebody and say, that's somebody that might try to shoot me, but just look like a normal guy, at least in the, you know, in that section of the video, right? Just look normal, walked up there, started to talk to him. And man, he just, the way he went for that and just, you know, kind of, you know, having his shirt was kind of over the top of it. But kudos to the law enforcement officer who was able to just, you know, he was switched on. He saw that. He recognized that it was a gun. It was at night. Yes, there was a light, but, you know, the shadows, it's at night. It's still very, very difficult. But he was switched on. He made the right call. He did not hesitate. Just worked out. I mean, amazing. I was very, very impressed with the situational awareness and how quickly they were able to react to that. And then the wife, she obviously had no clue, didn't see the gun, I don't even know if she knew there was a gun. She was obviously very, very, you know, she was freaking out, which just goes to prove, like, even she was shocked and surprised. She didn't even probably realize that he had a gun at that moment. Just, right. You know, by the way she was acting. So just a great job, in my opinion, on how that worked out.
Agreed. Well, hey, we got time. I think we can squeeze one more in. You want to take the guy that's at the crisis center that he ends up stabbing the security guard there?
Yeah. We can talk about that.
Rumble.com. This is Butter. So we have a security officer stabbed, resulting in the death of the suspect in Des Moines, Iowa.
Jacket pocket and begins to attack the public safety officer, stabbing him multiple times. The public safety officer attempts to defend himself, and as the attack continues, he falls into a triage room. Munoz continues to stab at the officer, who deploys a taser with no apparent effect to Munoz. As other staff members yell at Munoz, he becomes distracted and the officer is able to deploy his pepper spray. Munoz turns away from the spray and leaves the room. Munoz lingers in the hallway for a short time before exiting the building.
Put your hands up! Put your hands up! Shoot. Put your hands up! Put your hands up! It's all right. Get down on your knees. 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 Get down on your knees, dude. Get down on your knees. Get down on your knees. Get down. I don't want to shoot you. Get down on your knees. No, I don't. No, get down on your knees. Get down on your knees. It's all right, man. It's okay. My name's Christian. You're good. You're not in any trouble, all right? Just get down on your knees. Get down on your knees, dude. Get down on your knees. Where's the knife? Where is it? It's in your back pocket? Okay, get down on your knees. Get down on your knees, dude. It's okay. Get down on your knees.
I'm 10-2. He's not really complying, saying that we're going to have to shoot him.
Get down on your knees. No. Get down on your knees. Get down on your knees, dude. Get down on your knees. Get down on your knees. Stop. Dude, get down on your knees. I'm not going to shoot you. Get down on your knees. You're going to get tased. Get down on your knees. No. No.
No. Put your hands up.
No. Stop. Stop.
So it's the Des Moines Police Department. They released this body cam footage, and I'm going to go through this quickly. We've only got a few minutes here, but it's an officer-involved shooting that happened last month, and the police came into contact with a suspect accused of stabbing a public safety officer, but it happened at the Crisis Observation Center. So this guy, his name is Hunter Munoz, 24 years old. He was taken to this center, kind of like a bank rack. The family went and took him there for psychic evaluation. He was having some kind of mental issues and stuff, and while he's there, I guess they didn't search him. He pulls out a knife, and they've got some screenshots of him just like stabbing the crap out of this like security guy that's there, and he's fighting it off. And there's this, you know, and there's this female that comes around the corner. She screams and stuff. And so the guy's fighting for his life. So she distracts the guy, security guy. He didn't have a gun, I guess. He had a taser, and then he tried the pepper spray, but he survived, I guess, but he must've been in a world of hurt. So then the cops show up. This dude's already outside the place, and we got the officer draws down on the guy. And then he gets behind his door, opens up his door, and is in the middle of the street. And then he rolls his window up. I guess he was worried about the guy coming up and maybe stabbing through the open window and stuff.
No, I thought he was worried about him getting in the car to take off, because he had to walk away from the car, but maybe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a point. I don't know why he left the car. Yeah. I mean, you never give up ground, you know, in a situation like that. Well, obviously, you know, I'm wrong because this cop did.
Well, he didn't have a knife in his hand, though. So he had to get out of his car.
But he knew he was armed. You know, but he knew, you know,
but he had to get out of the car. Jim, what he's going to do, stay in the car and use his microphone? Like,
no, you don't leave the car. You know, you don't, once you start backing up, that's when you fall down and you get rushed. So you use the car as your barrier. That is the line that's not crossed. The guy advances on you, you know, maybe get behind the door if you have to. Maybe your gun's going to malfunction or something and you've got options being behind a fixed object like that. But, you know, you don't leave your car. Now, I don't know if he locked the car when he left, because I was thinking, dude, get in the car, drive away. Once you back away from your car and you leave cover, because, you know, the guy could always have another weapon on him too. You're assuming the guy's only got a knife, but you know he stabbed people. And so that's why I hate to see cops back away. You stay on your ground. You try to de-escalate the best you can. But the guy, you know, there's other cars, there's traffic there, and the guy's moving around. So now we got the cavalry showing up. We got multiple officers. And now you've got a situation where the backdrop is just, it's worse than what it was before. Now you've got a horrid backdrop because now they're in the middle of a freaking intersection and you've got like a three roadways all intersecting to this intersection. It's just a horrible backdrop. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you're going to take out innocent civilians. Or really finally the guy, you know, pulls out the knife and he charges at one of the cops and they light him up and it works out. But commentary, Scott.
Yeah. Again, I'm not a cop. I've never been a cop, but like I look at like it, him getting over there, like being in a car. You understand? He's in his car. The door's there. He's trapped. So I would not want to be anywhere near that situation. I'd want to have some room to maneuver. He has a knife somewhere. It's not in his hands now. So I'm not even concerned at that point. I mean, I'm aware of it. The guy already had his gun out. So I mean, what, you know, like, hey, and if he keeps coming at me without a knife in his hand, then take him down, right? If I have like the glove, which I would have the glove on in that situation, I have my pistol out. He does not have anything in his hands. He's walking towards me, and then I'm gonna arrest him. And then if he makes a move, okay, well then I escalate from there.
So there is. You could be, look, you have to be in the right frame of mind in order to just, but it could be, and we're coming up on our time here, but it could be, you have reason to believe that this guy, you know, he stabbed the guy multiple times in there with a knife, and you have reason to believe that he has a knife, but you don't have to see the knife before you use lethal force. Just like a guy that's got a handgun and he's not showing, or he's got his hand behind his back and you can light him up without waiting for him to pull the gun out. So, but you have to be in fear of great bodily injury or harm when you do that. So if the cop is not in that kind of fear, then yeah, you wouldn't be justified in doing it. But good point and good discussion. Hey, Scott Stark, great show. Thanks so much for being on it. Also, a shout out to Gauls.com, ComplyTechnologies.com, Gunlearn, my Medicare, Safeguard, Recruiting, and Two Bells. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.